The comfort of your favorite seat is now your comfy car selling command center, thanks to Carvana.
It doesn't get any better than this.
Your favorite seat's the best spot in the house. Make it even better by entering your license plate or VIN and getting a real offer in minutes.
There really is no place like home.
And speaking of home, Carvana will pick up your car from yours after you finalize your offer. Visit Carvana.com or download the app and sell your car from your comfy place.
Delve into the shadows of the mind with Sleeping Dogs, a gripping murder mystery starring Academy Award winner Russell Crowe. Now available on digital. Crowe portrays an ex-homicide detective unraveling a brutal murder he can't recall. Uncovering secrets from his past, he learns a chilling truth. It's best to let sleeping dogs lie. Visit sleepingdogsmovie.com/wondery to watch Sleeping Dogs, now on digital. That's sleepingdogsmovie.com/wondery.
Fill her up.
You're listening to the Gas Digital Network.
Hey guys, today's show is brought to you by the Soho Forum. That's right, the Soho Forum, and they've got another live debate coming up. I've probably missed the Soho Forum more than anything else during all of these lockdowns, and I'm really excited. They have another live event coming up, first one since this whole pandemic has broken out. They've been doing online debates, but this one will be live. It will be in Villages, Florida. It's coming up on February 18th at 5 p.m. So if you can get to it, make sure you do. Go to thesohoforum.org for all the information. That's thesohoforum.org. This is going to be a debate between John Mackey and Yaron Brook. The resolution reads, "A clearly articulated purpose consciously embodied by the leadership should be an essential element in all business organizations while also enhancing shareholder value." It's a real interesting debate between John Mackey and Yaron Brook. I'm looking forward to this one. If you can get out there, make sure you do. Of course, the Soho Forum is the wonderful debate series organized by the great Gene Epstein, sponsored by Reason Magazine. Go to thesohoforum.org for all the information. All right, let's start the show.
We need to roll back the state. We spy on all of our own citizens.
Our prisons are flooded with nonviolent drug offenders.
If you want to know who America's next enemy is, look at who we're funding right now.
Every single one of these problems are a result of government being way too big.
You're listening to Part of the Problem on the Gas Digital Network. Here's your host, Dave Smith.
What's up, everybody? Welcome to a brand new episode of Part of the Problem. Very excited to have Jesse Kelly on the show, who is the host of The Jesse Kelly Show. I just did it yesterday, I guess 2 days ago when you guys listened to this. If you're not familiar with Jesse Kelly, he's a conservative, a Marine, and one of the most fun Twitter accounts to follow, I would say. Fearless and hilarious, which is a combination that I always enjoy. So thanks so much for coming on.
I appreciate you having me, brother. It's an honor. We should have done this a while ago. I'm glad we're catching up.
Yeah, absolutely. I think the first time I ever heard of you was when I was a contributor on Essie Cup Show back in the day, and on Headline News back in the day, you know, 4 years ago or whatever it was. And you used to come on and do segments. So we'd just be there in the studio while you were doing it. And I was like, I like this guy. He's got good points. And that was back when SE Cup was still kind of a conservative.
I mean, it's CNN. It's CNN. The truth is a lot of people lost their mind in the last 4 years. Yeah. A lot of people lost their mind in the last 4 years. It has been bizarre to watch. Honestly, it's been the people on our side have been as weird to me as the people on their side, the different positions people have all of a sudden come up with.
Yeah, it's been the whole Trump era was a test. You know, it was like a test of everybody's sanity, of everybody's philosophical consistency, and a lot of people failed the test on all sides.
He was the ultimate revealer. He was the ultimate revealer of who was just a pom-pom waver on our side, who was never really on the right at all on our side, who's a full-blown communist on their side, of how corrupt the system is. I learned a lot over the last 4 years.
Yeah, I think that might be, in many ways, the most interesting part of Trump's legacy. Not so much any policy that he, you know, got through, but just what he, the way he kind of revealed so much about the system by his very presence and the reaction that it inspired to him. Like, he, for whatever reason, drove the left absolutely nuts and drove conservative establishment types absolutely nuts. And I think for different reasons, for the different groups. Like, for the left, I really don't think it had anything to do with anything that he was advocating. I think it was just being an unapologetic, rich white man. It was just something they couldn't stand. Like, just like, I have a hot wife, I got big buildings, I don't care, I'm for you guys winning. And this drove them all nuts. I think for the conservative establishment, it was really the questioning of the American empire that really drove them nuts. But I don't know. I'm curious what your thoughts are.
Yeah, I agree with some of it. Well, really with all of it, because I think it's probably a complicated question to answer. I would say he drove the left crazy because the left, especially by the end of Obama's 8 years, the left rightly believed that they were in control of the entire system in a way that they have never been before. I mean, and when I talk about the system, I talk about it all the time. I don't mean some cabal of people in a room smoking cigars. I just mean everybody has gone through the same education system now for several generations, and now everybody in education, media, Hollywood, entertainment, the entire federal bureaucracy, the whole Democratic Party, the church, the military, that they all believe one ideology, exactly one ideology. And Obama made sure he ingrained that even more. And by the end of Obama's 8 years, they just thought, well, there's never going to be a Republican again. Frankly, I didn't either. And then all of a sudden, Trump comes in and Hillary's the Antichrist, so she can't win because she has the worst personality in history. I think he was such a shock to them that he existed, that that's really what got them, that this should never have happened. We were past anybody like this. This can't be happening. There was this disbelief there. And for the right, there are a lot of reasons people hated him on the right. Now, I liked him. I enjoyed him. I thought he did a lot of great things. I thought he did a lot of terrible things. The spending record is indefensible, absolutely indefensible. I screamed about it for 4 years. His hiring and lack of firing, also indefensible. There's no defense of the people that guy put up around him. And the reason he didn't fire all these scumbags like all the Democrats do every time is crazy to me. But I thought overall he was good. But for a lot of people on the right, he stopped the gravy train. He stopped the, well, let's just be nice. We can be nice, so let's be really nice. He stopped that, and he made them look weak. He made them look weak. It was because people were hungering so much for somebody like Trump, and now it's about to be way worse than that.
Yeah.
They were hungering for him. And what it did was expose what our traditional right-wing cast of characters really lacked, and that was any kind of a spine.
Yeah, no, absolutely. I remember, I've talked about it before on the show, but there was this hunger for fighting, particularly fighting the media on the right. There was really hunger for somebody who was going to stand up to it. And I don't know if you remember this moment, but it was in 2012 at one of the debates. And they it was down to like four people. I think it was like Romney, Ron Paul, Newt Gingrich, and maybe Santorum. There's like four people left in it. And the first question they asked at the CNN debate was about Newt Gingrich's ex-wife. And Newt Gingrich just blasted them. I mean, blasted them, and was like, this is disgusting that you would open a presidential debate with this. You should all be ashamed of yourself. No. And it got like a 5-minute standing ovation. Like, the Republican base was so ready for someone to just fight the media. And I think that Trump really exposed all of those, like you said, all of the people who are like, well, we just have to play nice with them. And you're like, yeah, you're really out of touch with your own voters. They're not interested in playing nice. They've been labeled every name in the book just for being a conservative for years. And they're sick of it. And, you know, understandably so. Like, why wouldn't they want to fight back? And now there's almost like this weird, the Republican Party's in this weird space where their base clearly wants a Trump-like figure, and they really don't want a Trump-like figure, the establishment. And so it'll be interesting to see where they go from here.
Well, yeah, they're really in a bind, and the people really stuck in the D.C. bubble, the politicians and pundits there, they think now that Trump's gone, and the way it ended was terrible. It was just ugly. I mean, no one looks at that last couple months and thinks, oh, that was wonderful. It was terrible. And so the D.C. GOP types who either kept their head down or openly whined about him forever, they think this is their opportunity to, well, as you can see, it didn't work. Let's make sure that never happens again. And they are misreading the tea leaves on this so criminally bad that they thought that was bad. That is now the only checklist for who the GOP base will pick next is somebody who will fight the left. People think that there's, when you're running in a primary, there's some checklist of stance you have to have on the issues, low taxes and low spending and pro-life and Second Amendment and all these things. That's not true at all. The right will pick somebody who's flat out left at this point if that person promises to fight the left like a battle axe. Yeah. And they thought Trump was the end. Trump was the appetizer. Somebody so much worse is coming, I'm telling you.
Yeah, and that was a thing. I used to talk about this all the time, that I was just like, you know, all the people who are like, oh, Trump's literally a fascist, the literally Hitler crowd, you'd be like, do you guys realize that Trump might actually be a hedge against a true right-wing authoritarian? Like, the fact is that at least he is a guy who the right wing will support. And if he gets taken out, who knows? How, like, maybe they would go for somebody who actually is everything you think Donald Trump is if he was a big enough middle finger against the left. This is the danger of, you know, the hatred for half of the country, is that once they've been hated for so long, they're willing to go with just about anybody who will fight back against the people who hate them.
Well, the most base human instinct is safety. That's why human beings find themselves in tribes and then cities and towns and nations. People group up for safety. That's all they care about. The people on the right, rightfully so, think the left has completely destroyed their culture. They don't recognize it. They don't want it. And they are going to pick somebody who will stop them from doing it. And I'm not saying this to insult the right. I am as far right as I can. I am as bloodthirsty right as I can. Within a decade or two, people on the right will gladly pick somebody who will imprison journalists on our side. That is not an unpopular stance on the right. And that's awful, right? It's authoritarian, and that actually is fascist and stuff like that. That nobody who needs to fix themselves to prevent that from happening thinks they have to fix themselves. And in fact, they all think they need to double down on everything they're doing to make the right terrified. And I'm telling you, an authoritarian is coming.
All right, guys, let's take a quick second. I want to thank our sponsor, our brand new sponsor for today's show, which is Fume. Fume is a great natural and non-addictive replacement for smoking, vaping, and nicotine addictions. It's not a vape and not a cigarette. Fume is a hollow piece of Canadian maple with cores infused with the benefit of the world's superplants. Using Fume is a great replacement therapy, replacing the hand-to-mouth action. A number of the different flavors are great natural nicotine craving reducers too. There's a wide selection of cores which focus on flavor, aroma, and the specific effect you're looking for. The newest Conquer cores are a deep cooling mix of earthly sweetness, a combination of black pepper for cravings, peppermint to help with breathing, and cinnamon and lavender to ease the pain of quitting. The Conquer are the number one cores for quitting smoking start to finish. All Fume items are manufactured and sustainably produced in Calgary, Alberta, Canada, with Canadian maple. Part of the problem is about a lot of things, but new knowledge and betterment of ourselves is at the top of the list. Smoking cigarettes and vapes is a disgusting habit, and people are constantly trying to quit, myself included. It's still resolution time. Quitting smoking or vaping is always at the top of the list, and Fume is a great help when it comes to changing your habits. Check out their website at fumeessentials.com. That's fumeessentials.com, and take a look at their entire selection. There's more than a half dozen flavors, and they explain the entire Fume program. You can subscribe for monthly deliveries and never have to worry about your Fume supply, or check out the new products a la carte and find your favorite that way. Use promo code PROBLEM10, and that'll get you 10% off your entire order at fumeessential.com. Be sure to upgrade yourself this year. Go to fumeessential.com. All right, let's get back into the show. One of the things that it's like a theme that I've been talking about a lot on the show is that, and it's really disturbing, is that it seems pretty clear that the Democrats, the establishment, the corporate press, all of it, they have no interest in bringing the Trump supporters into the fold. Like, they're not trying to say, okay, we kind of hear your complaints. We're not going to give you everything you want, but what if we just offer you a little percentage of what you want? You know, the example that I was using is like the church hearings in the 70s, where, okay, the excesses of the CIA had kind of been, revealed. That people had the Pentagon Papers, they knew about political assassinations, all this stuff. So there was at least this show. Now, they didn't really rein in the powers of the CIA, but they were at least willing to go like, look, we're going to rein in the excesses. We're responding to the demand of the people. You know what I mean? Now, for Donald Trump, you would have thought that the response from the Democrats might be like, okay, look, we hear you. You want immigration controls. We don't want to build the wall, but we are going to try to do more to ramp up security. We'll meet you kind of in the middle. We'll bring you back into the fold. Instead, the Democrats are like, illegals should get free healthcare and free education. You have to pay for it. Like, they went, and now it seems very clear that the preferred method is to squash this movement through authoritarianism. We're going to call you domestic terrorists. We're going to wipe you off of social media. We're going to do everything we can to put this movement down. And the problem is that the movement's too big. It's like 74 million people who voted for Donald Trump. You're not talking about a couple million people here. So what is this going to look like to try to put this movement down? And what's the response that you were getting at? Like, what's that going to look like? And this is dangerous territory.
Oh, it is very dangerous. I've said this before. I'm really worried about somebody getting seriously hurt. And I mean seriously hurt. And I'm not talking about a random person here and there. Not that their life is worth any less than anyone else's. I'm worried about a senator dying or a congressman dying. That's the powder keg we have right now. The country is that divided. And as you just pointed out, their response is not a hand at all. It's not to extend a hand. It is crackdowns, DHS, terrorist watch lists. You're a Nazi. You're a white supremacist. And that is creating something really, really dangerous here. It is. And it, like you pointed out, it's not a tiny minority. I mean, we may not be the majority. I don't believe that at all. But we're not a tiny minority. This is a huge number of people you've demonized now. And it's full steam ahead for them. Like I said, they want to make sure a Trump-like figure never happens again. And instead, they're going to ensure they get one that's much, much, much worse.
Yeah. And the Republican Party, the Republican base that's against Donald Trump, they have like nothing to stand on. Like, they have nothing to say to the Republican voters. That it was Jeff Deist was saying recently. And he was like, you know, what is the conservative movement lay claim to at this point? Like, the official conservative movement, that can they claim that they've conserved the culture? Do they have a claim to the Constitution and the Bill of Rights? Do they have a claim to limited government, to any? It's like they have nothing to really say, this is what we represent. And so, to your point, people are looking for something, someone who will do something for them.
Well, this is my main problem, and you're probably going to argue with me on this. This is my main problem with conservatism, with libertarianism, with all of it. That's me, right? It's tiny government, stay out of my freedom. I don't care what you do. I'm going to do what I do. I'm a big mind my own business guy. But I'm always trying to look at things from a macro level. And philosophically, communism, the way it is a religion of domination. They are always, I mean, the base tenet of it is it has to be worldwide. That's how they destroy everything, is they never stop. They're always playing offense, always advancing. Conservatism, libertarianism, whatever you want to call it, does not have an offensive mechanism built into it because by its very nature, it's live and let live. Leave me alone. Leave me alone. Well, anybody, if you want to look at this as combat, and politics is just a continuation of that, anybody knows you can't just hide behind the castle walls and let them pound forever. You have to have some mechanism to beat them back off the walls, or they're coming in. I don't care how long it is. And there's simply no offensive mechanism to it. And that DC GOP type you just talked about, what they've never gotten is it's their failure. Like you said, they didn't have, what is conservatism conserved? I'm looking at 6'2 former males that are stomping women into the ground on the track. And it's not a small thing. And people are horrified and they're worried for their daughters and what this means for women's sports. And you don't get any solutions at all to conservatism. Big tech is a great example of this. And I'm twisted on this myself. You have 2.6 billion people between Facebook and Twitter. It is the means of communication now. It's how people consume news, share news, talk with each other. It is the means of communication. It's the public square now.
Yeah.
Okay, you let a bunch of communists take this over. They're smashing people on the right. And the only answer you get from people like me, frankly, is, well, we can't have the government step in. Well, that's not good enough. The people who are getting crushed need some kind of a solution. And if all I can say is, well, if it's none of my business, then they're going to go to somebody who has a solution.
Yeah, I look, if you were expecting me to disagree with you, I don't think I'm going to be able to. It's a real catch 22. It's really, you know, this thing where you go, okay, and I've talked about this with a lot of other like hardcore libertarians. And I'd be like, okay, so you have this philosophy that says they're a private company, they have the right to discriminate. And like, I'm 100% with you in the theory of it, like, absolutely. And I could certainly get into why I think the government intervening will be a disaster. And all of this, right? But let's say tomorrow you have all these big tech companies that go, we're booting all libertarians. So now libertarianism is out of the public arena. There's just no, and it's not that far off. They did freeze Ron Paul out of his Facebook account recently. So they're going to go around saying people who incite violence, and then they freeze Ron Paul, who's been nothing but a champion of peace, perhaps the greatest champion of peace in modern American history, literally just end the wars, end the war on drugs, end police brutality, end all of this. And by the way, end, you know, government spending and all of these different things. So he's out. So if your own philosophy is going to lead to you not being able to espouse your own philosophy, that's quite a predicament to be stuck in. And I do, I agree with you that I think by the very nature of conservatism, if you're always trying to conserve and someone else is always trying to move the needle in a different direction, the natural outcome is that you slowly move the needle in their favor. And it hasn't been that slow, to be honest, but that's where we're stuck right now.
That's where we're stuck. And it's why I'm worried about the future, because I don't know what that looks like. And like I said, as everybody knows, I'm a small government guy because there are a bunch of corrupt scumbags who can't do anything right. But I'll wake up in the morning as a tiny government libertarian type. And by the time I go to bed half the time at night, I want the National Guard to storm into Facebook's headquarters and take the place over. I mean, that's the thing. And that's me. I know what I believe. What about the people who don't know what they believe? They just know they're scared. And the left has not stopped moving forward. It's not in their nature to stop moving forward. They're never going to get to a place where they're like, okay, we've taken over enough. That's not the mentality at all. That's why people got shocked when they got to the churches. The churches are a great example. People forever thought they had the churches. So we'll at least be fine in church. When have the communists ever not come to the church? That's the first place they're going. The military too. Did you think the communists were going to let you have the military? Well, you can have that, but we'll take everything. They don't think in that way. So one day Americans wake up and Aunt Jemima feels the need to change her logo. And they're all, what? Wait, what? Well, that's how they think. They want things that you didn't even think about. They want it all. That's how they operate.
Yeah, I remember when I was a kid, you know, like a teenager, and the gay marriage was like the big civil rights issue of the left. This was the issue. And conservatives, and I used to laugh at some of these conservatives. I thought it was the dumbest shit I'd ever heard in my life, where you'd have like these kind of Jerry Falwell type conservatives who would be like, if you legalize gay marriage, then they're going to come for the kids. And I'd be like, that is the dumbest shit I've ever heard in my life. Like, it's just gay people being allowed to get married. And I'm not saying he was completely right, but in hindsight, looking back at it, you're kind of like, oh, wow, they really did kind of go after children. Like very shortly after getting this, it was like, okay, we got that. No celebration. No, you know, like basically the conservative half of the country just accepted gay marriage as the law of the land everywhere. There's never been a huge backlash over it. The left won. They won on what was their big civil rights issue. And they didn't even take a minute to be like, okay, good job, everybody. It was right to like, okay, now there's no such thing as boys and girls. And what do you, if you say there is, then you're a bigot also. You're just as bad as the guy who didn't want gay marriage. And you're like, wow, they are, they're bold.
Well, yeah, that's you're so right. And I was always one of those types too. And I'll tell you something else that's a hard one for me. remember it. Now, this is probably prior to your time, definitely prior. Yeah, it's prior to our time, probably 60s, 50s, 60s. But we've read about it, of parents not liking this rock and roll. Well, I'm a rock freak, right? You know, Led Zeppelin, all that stuff. That's me. Guns N' Roses, that's me. Were they wrong? Were they wrong? What do you say? Turn on a music video for your 10-year-old now. Uh-huh. You can't watch TV commercials now, let alone a music video out there. The TV, what does it celebrate? You brought up gay marriage. It's a great example. As a whole, and it's in a vacuum, most people on the right are like, I don't really give a crap. I don't need to see it all over my TV, but I don't care. Okay, well, now we had a 9-year-old boy. Maybe he was 11. I take that back. 9 or 11-year-old boy dressed up in drag, dancing like a stripper on Good Morning America in ABC, with the host sitting there clapping and cheering like seals. And the country woke up one day and was like, holy crap, these people will stop. And they're never going to stop there. All those wingnut, like you mentioned, the wingnut pastors people used to mock, who said they're going to be dating animals soon. Oh, they will. I guarantee they will. They're never going to stop. They'll come up with something new that you haven't even thought of or dreamt of yet.
Yeah. And it does just seem like the whole thing is it becomes unsustainable at a certain point, where you're like, well, guys, I mean, like, how do you actually operate a society this way? I mean, feel, you know, however you want to about like some different traditional values. I mean, don't we need some type of values that bind us together as a society, or what is this?
Well, that's where we went wrong, honestly, Dave. That's where we went wrong when we got away from God or the Christian church or whatnot. And people can feel their own way about it. I'm not here to spread religion around, and Lord knows I'm the least qualified person on earth to do that. But the truth is this: every society in the history of mankind has had some kind of religious base, some kind of religious mooring. And I mean, look, you don't want to do what the Aztecs did and cut people's hearts out for your religion. But you see what I mean? Every society, because there is no law without it. Unless you have some sort of moral guidance, the society won't put itself together. And they mocked the God and mocked the Christian church and look at these idiots. But some kind of religion is going to fill that. And the lack of religion is a religion in and of itself.
Yes.
And so now you have no moral grounding at all. Why can't we do whatever? Well, without any moral grounding, whatever your religion of choice may be, you're screwed. That is something every society has had for a reason. We're not in some post-religion world. Human beings have not changed. You're built, you're created that way. So without it, we are completely rudderless and we're just floating around. And so anything goes, of course. And when the left is out to destroy it all, it's music to their ears.
Yeah. And there's, I completely agree with what you said, particularly there. I mean, I used to be an atheist, and I basically, you know, I believe in God now, but I've also just come to the conclusion that atheism is a mirage. Like, it does. I mean, I'm sure there's some people who are actually genuinely atheists, but really, in terms of a large scale, the desire to worship, the religious impulse is always there. And the most atheistic communities end up being the most fervently religious. I mean, they just worship other things. You know, like the social justice warriors are all atheists, but they're all in a cult. I mean, the whole thing is a religion. They worship it, you know, they have everything from their deities to their, you know, like to people committing blasphemy to the, it's like every aspect of it is there. And I remember back in the day, I'd hear, like, you know, the new atheist types, the Sam Harris and Christopher Hitchens, and they'd make their arguments, and the religious people would always point out, they'd go like, well, look at the Nazis and look at the commies. I mean, this is what happens when you get rid of religion. And their counter to that would be like, no, that was a religion, which is like kind of true. But the problem there is then you're like, yeah, but why is that what happens when you remove religion? Then they just start worshiping the state as if that's their religion. So it kind of seems to imply that you can't really, on a large scale, remove religion. You can only replace it, because to worship, that's like hardwired in our DNA. You can't really get rid of that.
It's how we're made. It's how we're created. We are created to worship, and you will worship something. That is a fact. And look, the truth is, that's part of the reason the left is so violent. Now, think about this. Setting aside, you know, leftism for a second, understanding that communism is a religion of domination. What happened? Every religion, Christianity, Muslims, Jews, everybody throughout the history of mankind, what have they not done in the name of their religion? People will murder for their religion. They'll happily murder heretics in the name of their, they'll die for their religion, and they will murder for their religion. And so I see so many on the right, especially the DC types we talked about earlier, not understanding what we're facing, acting like this is just a friendly game of cribbage and we'll just see who wins in the end and then we'll go have a spot of tea. No, this is a blood sport for them. They are in it all the way. When they call you a Nazi, most of these people, it's hard to accept, most of these people believe that. They believe that, and they believe that all the way. And what won't your conscience allow you to do to a Nazi? You can do anything you want to a Nazi. He's a Nazi.
Yeah. Yeah. It is awfully interesting how that becomes like, you know, it's like it Nazi doesn't even mean Nazi anymore. It's just like the cartoon version of you're not a human, basically. Like it has nothing to do with the actual, you know, like, you know, Nazi movement of the 30s and 40s. It's just like you lose all of your humanity. You're on the side I don't like. I can call you this tremendous evil thing now, and that'll justify anything that I put up against you. It's it's pretty creepy. It's
a tactic that's been used by the military for years. I mean, I was in the Marine Corps. It's a tactic the militaries have always used. It's not unique to America. You know, prejudice isn't unique to America, but sure. It's something you do. In World War II, there were Japs, there were Krauts. You know, we had our own name for the Iraqis when we were in. It was, and you're not doing it because you genuinely feel that that nationality is inferior, although there's some of that. You're doing it because you don't want that to be another young man who's 18 years old and just like you in your eyes. You have to make him something else. In World War One, they called the Germans the Huns. I mean, who can't picture Attila the Hun? What, you better stop the Huns. You can do anything to a Hun, a German kid who looks just like you. You can't do much to. That's why this language, this rhetoric, it is dangerous. Nazi white supremacist, this. When they're talking about now purging white nationalism from the military, I've been going off about this, talking about what they're going to do and how they're going to abuse it. People are just screaming at me, oh, you want white nationalism? No, I know what they're doing. I know where they're going, and I know how this ends.
All right, guys, let's take a quick second. I want to thank our sponsor for today's show, which is Quip, the oral health company. And they have got this new gum, which I've been chewing all the time. I don't know how many of you guys out there are gum chewers, but that is one thing to do for your teeth that is easy. And it's helpful. Brushing, flossing, and now also start chewing their gum. It's delicious, and it's got all these ingredients in it that are good for your teeth. Gum is the unsung hero when it comes to better oral health. The American Dental Association recommends chewing sugar-free gum for 20 minutes after meals. Gum is something people can chew as a way to relax, relieve stress, curb appetites, and most importantly, freshen breath. But many people don't realize that gum can also be an integral part of a healthy oral care routine. It was only a few short years ago that Quip reinvented the toothbrush for the modern age. They've done it again, this time for chewing gum. They've launched a new gum that's actually good for your oral habits and comes with a dispenser that'll remind you of the one-click candy you loved as a kid. The dispenser is really cool. It's one of those ones where it stacks on top of each other and you just kind of pop out one piece at a time. It's super easy to load, super easy to use. And like I said, the gum really tastes great. I love it. Me and my wife both use it. It's not a substitute for brushing or flossing, of course, but this is a great support for your oral care. Pair it with the Quip electric toothbrush for adults and kids, refillable floss, and more great products. In addition to the gum packs, Quip also delivers fresh brush heads, floss, and toothpaste refills every 3 months for $5. Shipping is free, so you can save money and skip the misery of in-store shopping. Spread good oral health habits and join the over 5 million mouths already using Quip. Get chewing for less than $2 per pack of gum. And if you go to getquip.com/problem right now, you can get a free plastic dispenser with any refill plan. That's a free dispenser at getquip.com/problem. That's getquip.com/problem. Quip, the good habits company. All right, let's get back into the show. I like that Curtis Yarvin guy, who I don't always agree with, but he has some really interesting metaphors and stuff. But he said something along the lines of, he goes, Donald Trump was like the right-wing populist movement. It was like they were virgins, and he was like a three, and they just fell in love with a three, and they like, convinced themselves that that was like the hottest chick ever that they had scored. And you're like, look, I mean, I understand. You got laid, and congratulations. It's great. You're not a virgin anymore. But like, it was really like a three. But so Donald Trump, you know, when he banned critical race theory from being taught in federal, you know, institutions, and it's like, you know, Donald Trump's But this, and this is ultimately the problem with Donald Trump. Like, he was famous enough and brash enough and ballsy enough to just fight everybody, but he really didn't know enough. He didn't know nearly enough. And that's Donald Trump's flaw. He thinks he's so smart that he doesn't really have to read anything or learn any of this shit. But so he was just watching Fox News and heard about critical race theory and was like, what? That sounds stupid. Let's not do that. I'm banning it. And it's like, dude, you needed to know this. You needed to know what's going on. But the fact that they're pushing this critical race theory, diversity training, all this stuff on the military, to me seemed like the strangest of all of it. Like, are we really teaching the military about microaggressions? Like, however you feel about the military, it is by nature the federal government's killing force. You know, like, that's what it is. It is used for, in the best sense, it would be used for if we are threatened and we have to defend ourselves by killing a lot of people, this is what we use to go do that. But the idea that you're going to teach this group of young men about political correctness and then we'll send you out to the battlefield, that seems so bizarre to me.
It is bizarre, but again, what communist regime has ever allowed dissent or disloyalty in the military? It's one of the very first sure. things they do. You know all the stories, Dave. They had political officers in the Soviet Union. Well, yeah, of course you guys are going to do that. Whoa, are you rolling your eyes about the mission from the dear leader? I hope you're not doing that. This is when you understand. I mean, I don't say that to be inflammatory. When you understand these people are communists, and a lot of them don't realize they're communists, but that's what they are. Everything else makes sense. They do believe in thought control. They do believe in taking over the military. They believe in censorship. They believe in killing people who don't agree with what they agree with, and they believe it's for the greater good. You saw that clip the other day, John Kerry with his big idiot face flying all over the world in a private jet. Mm-hmm. And they asked him about it when he got overseas. You're over here for climate change in a private jet? He didn't think a thing of it. He said, well, I'm here doing this to save everybody. Of course. Of course, that's how they all operate. Stalin wasn't going hungry when he was starving Ukrainians by the million. He was doing just fine.
Right. Kim Jong-un today, he's a little chubby thing. He's eating just good while all those kids starve to death. Yeah, it's a, you know, so you were in the, you were in Iraq under George H.W. Bush, right?
No, George W. Bush.
You were in Iraq too.
I was there.
I didn't mean to make you older. Okay. So, and so what years were you over there?
2003. Okay. Yeah, we left in March of 2003. We left Kuwait. I was there for the invasion, for the initial.
Okay.
Yeah.
Oh, so you were there for the successful part.
Well, I mean, and even then was revealing. It was so, I mean, I grew up a lot then and woke up a lot then. We were in the middle of invading Iraq, and I was in, obviously, Marine Corps infantry. And at one point in time, they told us that take our American flags down off of our Amtraks. They were our troop carriers. We were moving through the country. And we're like, what? I mean, we're a bunch of young alpha male patriots, dang proud to fly the American flag. What do you mean take it down? Well, we don't want to look like we're conquering. Well, what the hell are we doing over here then? I'm here on behalf of America. Take it down. Then what are these guys dying beside me for? What is the point of all this?
Yeah, one of the, and I got to say, this is one of the things that I liked about the Trump presidency is that one of the things that really shook up in the American political system is you see now, like, the hardcore right wingers, their big talking point about Donald Trump is he didn't get us into any new wars. And I just find that really interesting. Not only that Donald Trump ran and won on these wars were pointless, we never should have fought them, George W. Bush lied us into these wars, but then after he's gone, like, the right-wing talking point isn't he smashed ISIS, he smashed all these guys. I mean, not that no one says that, but the big thing that I'm hearing people say is he didn't get us into another one of these stupid, pointless wars. And that's a real interesting change in my lifetime from, like, the George W. Bush years.
Look, I see it because I was involved in it, and I've changed ideologically during that time too. I was like anybody else when the towers went down. Give me a weapon, let me go kill some terrorists. I'm mad. I'm screw this. I'm glad we're doing it all. And then after we're there long enough, you start looking around and you're thinking, wait a minute, something isn't adding up here. And I'm glad that's gone to the rest of society. By 2021, we have sons patrolling the same streets their fathers did in Afghanistan. And then the Afghanistan papers came out. People forgot about that. the most damning piece of evidence I've seen in a long time. They never had any direction. Those guys never had a chance, didn't have a clue what they were doing. And we got guys getting blown up over there. I'm glad the American people see the scam. But, you know, his tweets were mean. So now we have Joe Biden and we'll be there forever.
Yeah, yeah, it does seem like that. He's already indicated that he's bailing on Trump's deal with the Taliban and not going to come back. And of course, then, you know, they tried to make it like this thing where you're like un-American. What was it? The guy Tim Ryan, was that him? The one who was arguing with Tulsi Gabbard in the Democratic debates. And he goes, well, we can't make a deal with the Taliban. They attacked us on 9/11. And she's like, it was Al-Qaeda who attacked us on 9/11. And he's like, well, okay, you know, still though, and you're like, all right, man. I mean, yeah, almost 20 years later, what the hell are we even fighting for? I mean, like, we got Osama bin Laden. We've basically just entered into a pure nation building exercise in Afghanistan, which everyone, I remember talking to, I won't say his name because I don't know if he'd want me to say this on air, but I was talking to a guy who was a Green Beret. Who was in Afghanistan during maybe like 2007, 2008, somewhere in those years. And he was telling me, we were getting a beer at a bar after a Fox News gig. And he was telling me that he was like, dude, I was in Afghanistan trying to train up this military, which is just like, you know, you're like giving a guy a gun who's illiterate and trying to teach him what to do to defend. And then you come back a week later and you find out that he robbed everyone else in the village with the gun you gave him. Like, it's just the most ridiculous plan ever. And then he'd hear George W. Bush on TV talking about how training the Afghan military is going so good and they're almost going to be ready. And you're like, man, this whole thing is just, he's just lying to the American people. Like, this is not working at all. And I think there's a lot of people in the military who kind of became disillusioned with the whole project.
Oh, they know. They know. In fact, I mean, you're welcome to say his name because I'm probably buddies with him. I'm buddies with so many Green Berets. But they all say the same thing in private. I mean, those guys have been through the worst. They went through way worse stuff than I ever did. And they've seen their buddies die. And after a while, I mean, these are sharp dudes too. Green Berets are sharp dudes. They're looking around thinking, what for? What for? And they see how certain parts of Afghanistan's culture are just absolutely repulsive. They're indefensively bad. All cultures are not equal. And the culture of child rape that goes on over there. Mm-hmm. I hate to say, bring up something terrible like that. Stoning women instead, just really, really terrible. And we're not stopping it. We had American troops guarding poppy fields in Iraq. You'd get in trouble. I know this story for a fact. You get in trouble if you drove over some of the poppy while America's struggling mightily with all these opioid addictions. If you destroy a single poppy plant and are in Afghanistan, you're in trouble. I mean, people understand none of this is adding up. And people talk about Trump's foreign policy being great. It was. He was the best foreign policy president in my lifetime, which I can't believe he turned out to be that, but he was. And the truth is, I believe that's why he was impeached. I think that's part of the reason the system wanted him purged so gone. There is such a huge gravy train on that international having boots on the ground everywhere thing that there was a big reaction against him inside the Beltway.
Oh, yeah, no question. I mean, this was, you know, there's different things like there might be, you might know some left winger who really hates Donald Trump because he said, you know, the thing about Mexicans or the Muslim ban or something like that. But if you're wondering why, like, the CIA, the military industrial complex, all of those guys hate Donald Trump, it has nothing to do with him saying something mean about Mexicans. They hated him. And this is where the whole Russia thing came from, the whole, you know, the whole hoax, how they framed the president of the United States for treason for 3 years. And we're all supposed to just move on from that, like as if this wasn't the biggest thing that ever happened in the country, that deep state unelected spies framed the president of the United States for treason. And it was all because he openly ran on a plan of saying, let's just stop fighting these wars. And it was all about Syria, particularly, that he was like, let's work with Russia. That was his plan. Let's work with Russia. We both don't like ISIS. Who cares about Assad? We'll leave him in power. We'll get the hell out of there and let Russia fight ISIS. That works out great for us. No problem. Let's do it. And this was really what ticked off the, as you put it, the gravy train. This was like seen as a big threat to them. And he also brought up the actual treason because there was real treason. The word treason gets thrown around a lot, like just that. But the actual definition of the word treason was committed by the Obama administration with John Brennan and Barack Obama and John Kerry when they armed ISIS in Syria, knowingly armed ISIS. That is literally the definition of treason. They armed the enemy while we were at war with them. And Trump, in his Trumpian way, would just bring this up every now and then on the campaign trail. He'd go, Hillary Clinton and Barack Obama, they created ISIS. And they'd be like, you don't really mean that. And he'd be like, no, they created ISIS. They did. If you wonder why John Brennan hates Donald Trump so much, it might have something to do with the fact that he called him out for literal treason.
Oh, yeah. Well, that, I mean, it's so funny you brought that up, Dave. People just, now, we're all so immersed in the system, it's hard to break away from it, even if you're aware of it. But it is astounding. The bigger the screw up, the more the system will lie about the screw up, insist the screw up was a success, and demand that you acknowledge the success of the screw up. You have to always acknowledge the lie. And I'll keep coming back to this because it's true. It's been like this in every single communist country ever. They lie and they lie. And the bigger the screw up, the bigger the lie. And the bigger the lie, the more they demand that you acknowledge the lie. And don't you dare tell the truth. Anybody who tells the truth is a liar. People acted like that stupid thing that happened at the Capitol a few weeks ago was a big deal. I think mayors and governors intentionally destroying businesses to win a presidential election in a sane country, that's a capital offense. You can't do that. That is such an abuse of power. They, as you just pointed out, our federal law enforcement arm knowingly used bad information to spy on the political opponent of the president of the United States. They so far have found exactly one guy responsible for it, and he didn't even lose his job at the FBI, and let alone get buried under the federal penitentiary somewhere. The guy got probation. And, oh, it's okay.
And just to be clear, what the guy did, which is so dirty and so revealing, it's not as if like he it's not as if they had bad information and went and got a guy. Basically, what happened was the FBI goes, they're talking about Carter Page, who was an advisor, a low-level advisor to Donald Trump's campaign, but they wanted to get their teeth in to spy on the campaign. So he was the guy they targeted. And they, so the FBI went to the CIA and said, hey, we believe he was approached by Russians who asked him to, you know, work for them. And the CIA said to the FBI, oh yeah, no, we know he was, because he's our guy. They go, Carter Page is an informant of ours, and he came right to us with the information when the Russians approached him. So not only was there no ambiguity, but like they knew for a fact that he was not with the Russians because he came back and told the CIA about it immediately. And what this dirty motherfucker did was he, when he filled out the FISA warrant, he said, we believe that the Russians approached Carter Page and the CIA confirmed it. Which is technically true. They did confirm that he was approached by Russians, but to completely disprove. So it's a lie through omission, but a blatant lie. And this is how they got their whole teeth into the Trump campaign to begin with. They ruined this guy who was an American who was helping his government. They ruined him and then tried to bring down the whole campaign. And there's a lot of other dirty stuff that went on in there too. But yeah, this was, you know, I will say, and this is one of the things where I think libertarians deserve a little bit of credit, at least the good libertarians, the Ron Paul libertarians, who Ron Paul was right about every last one of the wars. He was ahead of the curve on all of that, that we never should have been fighting them. And number two, when the whole spying apparatus was built under Obama, they were like, this is going to be turned on any dissidents who ever challenged the status quo. And Trump just happened to be the first one, and it was all turned on him. And they, you know, they didn't bring down the president directly through it, but they sure boxed him in for 3 years. I mean, Trump really didn't even get a real presidency because of the Russia hoax. All right, guys, let's take a quick second. I want to thank our sponsor for today's show, which is Paul's to the Wall. Paul's to the Wall is a great podcast hosted by two libertarian brothers and longtime supporting listeners of this show, Mike and Nick Paul. Each episode, they interview new experts on different topics. Their guests have included greats like Scott Horton, Gene Epstein, Pete Quinones, Jason Stapleton, Matt Erickson, and the Lions of Liberty cast, just to name a few. Outside of political discussion, they also interview experts on other interesting topics such as history, cars, jujitsu, music, barbecue, and more. Pulse to the Wall can be found on all major platforms. I know people are always asking me about other great libertarian podcasts. Here's one that you got to check out right away, and that's Pulse to the Wall. That's P-A-U-L-S to the wall. Check it out. You're going to love it. All right, let's get back into the show.
Part of me is thrilled that we have Joe Biden now, because what Trump did, I mean, he was a political phenom, but he created this illusion in the mind of the right of this silent majority. We're the real power. If I had to hear that one more time in Trump's 4 years, I was just going to vomit into a trash can, because I'm screaming at Trump and everybody else who will listen. You are surrounded. Your entire presidential campaign has been hobbled because the entire system is against you. And you act like we're in some great position of power here. It's things are even, neck and neck. We are not even. I'm glad Joe Biden is there so we can finally wake up to the fact, no, all the worst people are in charge of every single cultural institution. We don't have anything. Culture war is not, we're not losing it. We have lost it. Now we have to start from that position to try to take it back, but it's over.
Yeah, I think you're right about that. We talked about this briefly on your show the other day, but I think that Donald Trump, I mean, first off, there's a real irony that the criticism of Donald Trump was, you know, like he was a dictator or something like that. And I've pointed this out on Twitter a lot. I go, you know, if Donald Trump's such a dictator, I mean, he was framed for treason and no one went to jail over it. So what, you know, like what type of dictator can you just try to frame and know there's no punishments when you get off from it? But the truth about Donald Trump is he knew how to fight on Twitter and to piss off the press and to call names, but he didn't really understand how to wield power at all. I mean, even Donald Trump sat around for 3 months before the election and said, this whole vote by mail thing is ripe for fraud. And then it just happened. And then he went, that whole thing was fraud. And you're like, okay. I mean, I don't know. Now, I'm not saying it's that easy to wield power because all of these institutions are progressive by their very nature. But the truth is he had no real mechanism of fighting back. He didn't even know how to start. He didn't even know where to begin. What Donald Trump in effect did was he, in many ways, put the right-wing resistance to sleep. Because they had their guy in there. They felt like you said, the silent majority, we've won. Really? Look at us, ha ha, liberal tears, all this shit. And he was the greatest organizing factor for the left. He's kind of what kept it. Look, he's the reason why the Southern Poverty Law Center can raise record amounts of money and all of these, they could all use him as kind of like a fundraising tool. He kept everyone together. Like we have, you know, we're all bound together by the great hatred of literal Hitler in there. And he kind of, to me, slowed down the process of the left eating themselves because they were all, you know what I mean, focused on Donald Trump. I think we're much better off in many ways having this bumbling old man in there who's transparently corrupt. And at least then, as you were saying, the other side of the country can kind of swallow the bitter medicine, which is that you're not winning. You're actually losing by a long shot. You've lost everything from academia to the press, to Hollywood, to Washington, to the bureaucracy, to like every power center is controlled by woke progressives.
The medical field. The medical field. I mean, you realize, I can't pronounce it because I'm an idiot and I went to community college. What is it? Hydroxychloroquine or something like that. Yeah. And I'm not a doctor, so I'm not telling people to take or don't take anything. But it is a fact. This is not controversial. Doctors across the country were treating coronavirus with that. They were treating it. They were on video. We had them on video saying, yeah, I'm treating people with it. It's been proven. It's safe and it's very effective. We had multiple governors, Democrat governors across the United States of America, banning it and stopping the medical field from giving a drug that could save people's lives because it might in some way look good for Donald Trump. Yeah. Do people understand the implication of that? Your elected officials will happily watch you die if it means more power for them. That is a system that is so corrupted and rotted and filthy that it's not salvageable. What we have right now is not salvageable at all. Yeah. And so I'm glad Joe Biden's going to drool on the microphone for 4 months until Kamala takes over.
Yeah. Yeah. And even Kamala, I mean, at least the thing I like about her is she is awful and everyone can see it. And I don't mean just, I don't mean awful, like in terms of her policies are awful or she's some terrible person. I mean awful, like just at the job, awful at the job of being a politician. She's got that Hillary Clinton quality. Like no, Obama in many ways was far more dangerous because he's like charismatic and charming, but Kamala Harris is just, ugh. And that's, I think that's good.
Oh, it is good. I'm glad the whole country is going to despise her as soon as they get to know her. I mean, even the Democratic Party, campaigning for the Democratic base, Kamala Harris comes in and she's a woman and she's a minority. And so, of course, they fall in love with her right away. I remember the media was going around shopping with her, just having a little girl trip on their stuff. And so that she launches up and all of a sudden she's leading the Democratic primary. And it took the whole Democratic base about a week or two to go, ugh. Yep. This is terrible. And then she just free fall down. And Joe Biden, because she's a woman, because she's a minority, picked her to be vice president. And now she's going to end up being president because that old fool's going to get chucked out the back door soon.
Yeah, it really is something. It's something to behold. But like, as you said, I mean, when you talked about that, like the big story, I mean, the big story to me over the last 4 years was, as I said, the deep state framing the president for treason. Then the big story over the last year, which really is something I just feel like has never been grappled with by the official media class, is just that the government like instituted totalitarianism in this country. And I don't say that word lightly. I mean, like, it's really the word totalitarian. What else, what other word could you describe it when Americans are watching the TV every day to find out from their governors what they're allowed to do? I mean, like the most intimate things, like, am I allowed to see my family? Can I go to work? Can I go to the park? Can I leave my house? What hours can I go to? I mean, it's like, this is pure totalitarianism. And we just ushered that in an election year for many political reasons. And that's like, was swallowed. Like we accepted that. Yeah.
That's when I talked about the great reveal. That was the most revealing thing. It was worse than collusion than anything else. That's what hit me hardest. I'll never forget it. We had governors and mayors saying, close your business or you'll be arrested, which, I mean, we were fighting a revolution over crap like that. Close your business or you'll be arrested. And Americans just went, oh, okay, I'll go home. I'm still stunned that it happened. I'm stunned that it happened. We have people who are so ingrained in the system, and they don't even know they're ingrained in the system. And now they're unthinking lemons. And we had some idiot doctors on TV telling you to stand 6 feet away from the guy beside you. And that's somehow supposed to be some advanced medical technology. That is honestly, it sounds like something a toddler would come up with. Yeah. And because of this, because he happens to have doctor in front of his name, not only did we do it, we've completely reordered American society to this stupid concept where everyone's standing in special spots in the grocery store trying to buy a bag of chips. You have to sit one seat away from somebody on a plane. In a restaurant, you can't sit at this one, but you can sit at this one. It is the stupidest thing I've ever seen, and we all still just shrugged and did it instead of this massive outrage as free Americans of, no, screw you. I'll tell you what, I'm going to go ahead and keep doing whatever I want to do. You come back to me when you have some kind of a solution that doesn't involve me standing away from everybody else.
Yeah. And I wonder sometimes, like, the conspiratorial part of my brain, you know, I wonder, it kind of reminds me of the thing you brought up earlier when you're seeing like, I don't know, someone was posting, it might've been you. Someone was posting the other day, a video of just the, some trans woman in track and field.
Oh yeah, that was me.
That was you. Yeah, just wrecking like a field of other women. Just, and it was so funny because it's just this huge, gigantic man, just destroying all these women in track and field. And it's almost like the value in it is that they're making us pretend in public. Like, you have to see that and go, oh yes, that's just a lovely woman competing at track and field. And then, like, behind closed doors, every normal person is like, okay, this is insane. Like, what are we doing? This is insane. But you have to lie in public. And that's how I feel about this COVID thing. Like, I'll be I was at this hotel in Texas, out in Austin, like a month ago or something like that. And I'm in the hotel, and like, there's like the hotel, like, check-in, there's the hotel bar, And then there's like some, you know, couches and seats like in a hotel lobby. And this old guy sits down in the seat and takes his mask off. And the woman behind the desk is like, sir, you have to have your mask on in here. And he just looks over at the bar 10 feet away from him where everyone's sitting down with no mask on, drinking their whiskeys. And but he's over here. And like, we all have to just look at this and go, what? Are we all just pretending that we're retarded? Like, what is this?
Well, look, the trans track thing is it's the best example in the world. It's exactly what I've talked about 1,000 times already on this show. The bigger the lie, the more they demand you believe it. Every person on earth knows that that's a man. Every person on earth knows you can't switch your gender. They do know it. They know it for a fact. Everybody knows why men dominate women in track and field, because men are bigger, stronger, and faster than women. Tough luck. That's how God made us. That's bigger shoulders, bigger hips, stronger legs. That's how we are made. And yet you're forced to set that aside and simply accept whatever lie they're selling you, or they'll shame you into it. I have this theory. As we wrap things up, because I got to do a TV show here in a minute. I have this theory I call the gladiator theory. And it's so true. It's so applicable to this society. Ancient Roman gladiatorial games were like the worst thing ever. I mean, the worst thing ever. Human on human killing, human on animal killing. Imagine how that would go over today. They used to kill rhinos and bears and everything else. And then they would torture prisoners at halftime. I mean, the worst thing in the world. And it was hugely popular. And if they brought that back for one major pay-per-view event today at the Superdome or something, one big event, 2 or 3 months from now, and they're going all in. It's everything they used to do. Full blood, death, everything. Think of what would happen between the day they announced it and that day. The outrage, the international outrage, every single news story, 10 million headlines. This is barbaric, inhuman, lawsuits, laws, every congressman on TV. It would be society-wide. Every media person telling you it's scum, every Hollywood stuff. It would be endless. It would be so bad that about a week before the event, they'd have a camera in people's faces asking them if they're going to buy it. And you wouldn't find one person in the United States of America who would say, I'm going to watch it. Everybody would say, that's disgusting. It's horrible. It's wrong. I won't do it. And on the day of the event, it would shatter every pay-per-view every single day ever. And what I just said is 100% true. And everybody knows it. Because the system has one ideology, it decides what you're allowed to say you believe. And everything else has to be shunned. Everything else is a scarlet letter, and that's what the system is.
And they're like, just like in someone's living room somewhere, they're like, guys, a dude's about to fight a lion on pay-per-view. Like, are you fucking kidding me? I mean, it's probably wrong, but I mean, I don't know. I want to see how this dude's going to do. I mean, this is going to be the greatest thing ever. It's like, that is interesting, because we are still the same animal. We're still the same animal we were back then, even despite the very different rules of what we're allowed to present ourselves as. All right. I know you got to go do your TV show, so I'll let you go. But I really enjoyed the conversation. Thanks so much. We got to do this again sometime.
Oh, we will. Appreciate you, my brother. Thanks for having me on.
Absolutely. Be good. Jesse Kelly, everybody, go check out the Jesse Kelly Show. I was just on it the other day. Really fantastic. And thanks, everybody, for listening. Talk to you soon. Peace.